Thank you, folks. Thank you. You know, this guy is a great promoter. I mean, first of all, he's got a terrific voice, so you kind of understand why Orion's been such a successful broadcaster. What a great voice. But just in case, he knew that I was going to plug his book, but just in case I forgot, he's got one up here. And it's on my desk. It's on my desk. And if you're out of jokes, first and foremost, every chapter has a joke, one of the ones that you just heard. So you can only imagine. My favorite is the Green Bay Packer joke, so you can look for it. But this is an amazing story of one person's life in supporting and advocating for agriculture. And his sidekick, Max, is also in the book. You guys look a little bit younger in the book than you do today, but not bad. But I would really encourage you to read this because it's a history of American agriculture over a number of decades, and I think one of the most impressive things is how many opportunities Orion has had to contact and communicate to presidents of the United States about agriculture. What struck me was reading his list of people, the presidents he's met and the circumstances in which he met them. To me, growing up as a kid in the early 50s and 60s, John Kennedy was somebody that my family looked up to as a Catholic family. We were obviously encouraged by his election. And so I was drawn to the story about the Big O and President Kennedy. Then Senator Kennedy was campaigning. He was going to be in Illinois and Wisconsin. Wisconsin. And he told his staff, he said, you know, I really need to talk to this guy because I need to learn about agriculture. I need to find out, you know, what I don't know about this. Were you the one who had a beer or did he have the beer? Okay, you both had a beer. What's really fascinating is that the senator actually stopped for a long period of time, had a beer with this guy, and listened to him opine and express the concerns and needs of American farmers. And that translated to a certain extent, I think, in the agricultural policy that the Kennedy administration advanced. So it's a good read, and it's it's a delightful story. So thank you for making sure that I plugged the book. Yeah, he's a good marketer. Well, speaking of marketing, I want to market American agriculture today and wish all of you a happy agricultural day. I went to the White House earlier today and wished everybody a happy agriculture day. But I've got two posters here that I want to show you, and I apologize for the folks in the back, but we'll leave them up here so at the end of the dinner you can come up and take a look at them. These two posters, in my view, say more about American agriculture than I can ever say in 1,000 speeches. Malcolm, let's do this one first. This graph is from a report that was just issued by the President's Export Council. And they have done essentially a book on American exports, and Chapter 8 of that book is the chapter on agriculture, and it talks about the fact that we've seen historic increases in agricultural exports and the very positive story we've seen the last 4 years. But what this chart shows is the extraordinary productivity of American agriculture. And it compares it to the rest of the American economy since 1948. So what you see in this chart is that by far, American agriculture's productivity far, far outpaced the entire American economy in its productivity. And if you think about all the things that have occurred in our economy since 1948, all of the advancements, all of the inventions, all of the new gadgets, but yet it's agriculture that substantially outpaces the rest of the economy in terms of productivity over that time period. It's a remarkable story, and it's in large part a result of American farmers and ranchers embracing new technologies, embracing new ways to do business, and the result, of course, is this extraordinary productivity gain. It's a busy chart, but it's a very instructive one. Now, Malcolm, if you'll do this one. And the beneficiaries of this, to a certain extent, to a large extent, are the rest of us, those of us who consume food. This chart, also very busy, you're going to want to take a look at it, charts the price for the things we eat. And what you'll notice from this chart is how significantly less expensive food has become. I mean, significantly less expensive. So at a point in time when we're increasing productivity, we're also decreasing cost to American consumers. And so that means they have a lot more flexibility with their paycheck, which means they can go out and do more things and buy more things and go to different places and live in nicer homes and take care of their families, because the American agricultural economy has provided this reduction in food costs. Two amazing stories. And these are stories, frankly, that we don't tell enough to the rest of America. We talk pretty well to each other, and we have Agricultural Day and we have agricultural groups that meet, but we really need to begin focusing on a much broader audience. And the reason I say that is because we've seen over the last couple of years the difficulty we have in getting a five-year farm bill through the Congress. A lot of challenges. We really wanted to get it done last year. I can't tell you how many times I indicated that if we didn't get it done, it would be a lot tougher this year. And it's actually going to be a lot tougher because the savings that we thought we'd get from some of the steps that were proposed last year have been substantially reduced by the Congressional Budget Office. And so it's a heavier lift this year. But we need a five-year farm bill. We need a bill that provides an appropriate safety net. We saw the importance of that last year. In the worst drought we've had in a long, long, long time, American agriculture still experienced a record amount of income. You know, certain segments obviously suffered through the drought in greater detail than some other segments, but nevertheless, overall agriculture did indeed experience record income in the midst of the most severe drought we've had, certainly in my lifetime. We need a farm bill that understands the role that conservation will play. We need flexibility in being able to craft those conservation programs for producers so that it will be tailored to the landscape and tailored to the specific need of that particular operation. We need a bit more flexibility, maybe fewer programs, more flexibility. So a strong safety net focused on crop insurance, conservation, streamlined process, and more flexibility. Promotion of trade. There's no question about the importance of that. I see John Block here, and if he's said anything to me, and every time I see him, he says this. He's sort of like you, Arnie. He has you're the book, and he's about trade. How many times have you asked, if you talked to me about trade, John? Quite a few times. The importance of trade and the importance of expanding trade opportunities for agriculture and the significance it has, not just for producers, but also for job growth in this country. It supports nearly a million jobs. The last 4 years have been the best 4 years in trade we've had in the history of the country, and we are on pace right now, even with some of the difficulties and challenges, to reach a record year this year as well. So trade, important to continue to advance all forms of agriculture. The beauty of our agriculture is its diversity. And organic agriculture is something that's growing, it's something that's popular, something that's high value added. We need a farm bill that makes sure that we continue to support that emerging nature aspect of farming and of the farm economy. We need a farm bill that promotes rural development, that promotes specialty crops, and promotes research. The reason why we've got this productivity gain, in large part, is because of the investments that have been made in the past in research. But unfortunately, over the last decade or so, our research commitment has been flatlined. In the last couple of years, we've started to inch it back up again. But we really do need, even in tough economic times, to promote research, because this is what's going to allow us to continue productivity. We're facing a difficult and challenging time, unlike, I think, any that we've seen at this department in quite some time. Congress is now in the process of finishing its work on the continuing resolution to extend our budget so that we have budget authority and resources for the end of the fiscal year. In doing so, the Senate is proposing to add, in addition to the sequester cut of 5.1%, another 2.5% cut to USDA. That means that we will have to implement a 7.6% cut in the remaining 6 to 7 months of the fiscal year. So it's, in essence, 15% of our remaining resources that have to be reduced. Very difficult to do, but I want you all to know that we understand and appreciate folks in rural areas in particular want us to be very careful about the dollars we spend. So we started 2 years ago to prepare for this day. And we've identified over the course of the last couple of years about $700 million in savings. We've reduced our workforce by 8%. We've closed offices and labs. We have consolidated our vehicle fleet. We've taken a look at our rental properties and made sure that we're using our space more fully so that we have to rent less. We have consolidated our purchases of technology. Just to give you an example, we used to have 833 cell phone contracts for all of the cell phones in the department. We whittled that down to less than 30, and we saved millions of dollars in doing so. So we've gone through a whole series of steps like this, and we're not finished, and we've identified about $700 million in annual savings as a result of these efficiencies. But the level of cut and the depth of cut will now put our discretionary operating budget at a place where it's $1.1 billion below what it was when I became secretary. So this is not a cut in the amount of growth like you see in some departments like defense. This is a real cut. This is below 2009 levels, which is why we will have furloughs that will interfere with service at some point in time during the year. And for that, we are sorry, but it is what it is. And we're going to try to figure out how to minimize the impact. But in the livestock industry in particular, we're faced with a very difficult circumstance, because if we don't get flexibility or resources from Congress as they pass through this budget, we will be required to furlough food inspectors. There's no two ways about it. It is what it is. Right now we're looking at 11 days of furloughs, and of course, as everyone knows, when you furlough food inspectors, it also means that you shut down processing facilities. It's an unfortunate circumstance and consequence of the way in which sequester has been crafted and the way in which the law was crafted. And so far, the House has not deemed to try to solve that problem, and the Senate has an amendment proposed by Senator Pryor and Senator Blunt that could potentially avoid this problem, but we don't know if it will get debated, and we don't know if it'll pass if it does get debated. So this is a challenging time for us here at USDA. But I am extraordinarily optimistic, notwithstanding the challenges. I am because of these two charts. I will say, in closing, because I know that you folks are looking at that salad and wanting to, it's always funny, they always put me in between you and the meal. It seems like I should speak after the meal or during the meal. Our challenge is reflected in this report that was issued by the Export Council. When I was born in 1950, roughly 36% of America lived in rural America. Today, it's a little over 19%. When I was born, roughly 12% of America's workforce was engaged in farming. Today, it's less than 2%. When I was born in 50, almost 7% of the entire gross domestic product was specifically related to agriculture. Today, it's less than 1%. Now, those statistics suggest a growing, vibrant American economy. It suggests many opportunities, particularly for young people. But what it also suggests is that we in agriculture, those who wish to advocate on behalf of agriculture, must understand the changing dynamic. And as you see shrinking populations and shrinking influence, it does impact the way in which the politics, if you will, of agriculture have to be played. And I don't mean Republican, Democrat. I mean the ability to advance issues and to advance agricultural interests through legislation like a five-year bill, through a reasonable budget. It's going to require us in agriculture to do a couple of things. First, it's going to require us, in my view, to extend our political alliances and to be strategic about who we align ourselves with. It can't just be us talking about this. We have to elicit some of our friends who are benefiting from our hard work, the folks who are grocers, the folks who are involved in nutrition. We need to embrace them and bring them into our world so they can be advocates for us. And we need to be proactive with the message. I see a lot of young people here today. We have a great message for young people. If you are concerned about the moral challenge of our lifetime, which is how you feed an ever-increasing world population, then you need to be involved in agriculture and you need to think about opportunities in rural America, because that's where that problem is going to get solved. If you're concerned about the climate and the environment, there's no better place to make a difference than in rural America and in agriculture. If you're worried about the American economy and whether it creates enough opportunity, the ability of the American economy now to become a bio-based economy where everything we grow, everything we raise, every aspect of it can be used to produce virtually every chemical, every plastic, every fuel, every source of energy is virtually unlimited. There's a new American revolution that can take place in the American economy that can be led by agriculture. Everything we grow, every aspect of what we grow. I have literally seen, and I've told this on many occasions, hog manure now being used to pave roads in Ohio as asphalt. I've seen corn cobs being used to produce plastic bottles for Coca-Cola products. I've seen woody biomass, wood chips, scrap wood, being converted into armor that's stronger than the current Kevlar that our military uses. I mean, it's unlimited. So if you're a young person and you want to redefine the American economy, you want to be on the cutting edge of innovation, there's no better place to do it than in rural America. So our message needs to be proactive. It needs to be positive. And we need to embrace diversity. There's no aspect of the American economy that's more dependent on immigrant labor than agriculture. And we should be encouraging our political leaders to embrace comprehensive immigration reform so that we make sure we have adequate numbers of folks to do what needs to be done in our farm fields, in our dairies, on our ranches, to make sure we can continue this productivity and continue to provide this opportunity for consumers. There is unlimited opportunity for young people. So that's the message I think we ought to be conveying. And we ought to be conveying it enthusiastically and proudly because we have a great story to tell. So as you celebrate tonight with dinner, as you reflect on the bounty that we have in agriculture, just make sure that you take the opportunity with a young person you know, a young person you care about, a young person you're concerned, to convey that proactive message. So enjoy the evening tonight. We welcome you to USDA. We obviously didn't pay the light bill, which is why the lights went out, but it is what sequester has done. You all are paying the price for it. So thank you very much, and God bless you all.